But if you close your eyes.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for tuning in. You're listening to This Week Again. I'm your host, Suzanne Posel. We're going to start off this show with the most hilariously embarrassing moments from Donnie's interview with the National Association of Black Journalists. Move on to even more reasons why J.D. Vance just sucks. And follow all of that up with Dreams of Election Fraud, brought to you by Project 2025. Let's begin, shall we? Now, I'm sure that there have been a few times in American history that one event encompassed the entirety of the fucking problem. But I can't think of any event that embodies this notion more than Barbecue Brutus's appearance on stage at the National Association of Black Journalists. Because holy fuck, that was a shit show of quarter pounder proportions. And I know the National Association of Black Journalists invited the convicted felon to speak at their convention, but whoever accepted that invite is not only a national hero, but obviously hates their job so much they're willing to get fired in a blaze of glory. The interview went exactly as you'd imagine, starting with how it all began.
I want to start by addressing the elephant in the room, sir. You have pushed false claims about some of your rivals. You have told four congresswomen of color who were American citizens to go back to where they came from. You have used words like animal and rabid to describe black district attorneys. You've attacked black journalists, calling them a loser, saying the questions that they ask are, quote, stupid and racist. You've had dinner with a white supremacist at your Mar-a-Lago resort. Now that you are asking black supporters to vote for you, why should black voters trust you after you have used language like that?
Well, first of all, I don't think I've ever been asked a question so in such a horrible manner, a first question. I love the black population of this country. I've done so much for the black population of this country. I think it's a very rude introduction. I don't know exactly why you would do something like that. And let me go a step further. And then you were half an hour late, just so we understand. I have too much respect for you to be late. They couldn't get their equipment working or something
Mr.
was
President,
wrong.
Mr. President, I would love if you could answer the question on your question. Wow. And why
I have answered
black
the question.
Trust you with another
I have
years.
Been the best president for the black population since Abraham Lincoln. For you to start off a question and answer period, especially when you're 35 minutes late because you couldn't get your equipment to work in such a hostile manner, I think it's a disgrace.
Hey, whoa there, old yeller. You said so many wrong things in such a short amount of time. I'm actually impressed. First off, let's put to bed the claim that the discussion at the National Association of Black Journalists started late because they had a problem with their sound equipment, because fact-checking journalists determined that was a lie.
So reports show that Donald Trump was refusing to take the stage unless the journalist agreed to not fact-check him live during the Q&A session. Philip Lewis, a reporter with HuffPost, wrote, "I'm told that Trump is demanding that NABJ not do the live fact-checking, and that's why the event hasn't started yet. We're in a standoff." The New York Times later confirmed this reporting, writing, "About 45 minutes before Trump took the stage, the former president pushed back on NABJ staffers who wanted to live fact-check the event. The board pushed back against the last-minute demand. When Trump took the stage, he said the delay was due to NABJ's audio issues."
Yeah, that tracks. The tiny-handed liar didn't want to be fact-checked in real life, so he threw a mantrum for 30 minutes, causing a huge delay, and then making up some old bullshit to explain why everyone had to wait longer than a 90s kid who ordered Domino's for dinner until the lumbering lardass finally old man shuffled his way onto the stage. And from there, this was just one disappointment after another, at least for his side. Like the crap about being the best president for the black community since Abraham Lincoln, because his token and South Carolina Senator Tim Scott set up a program aimed to get black people to vote for the Danger Yam in November, and we're supposed to believe that that's some sort of outreach to a community? Or maybe it was this stunt back in February that makes Donnie Dunscap think he's got it in with the blacks.
The former president unveiled a new Trump-themed product to a less than receptive crowd.
Appearing at SneakerCon in Philadelphia.
Announcing his, wait for it, a new line of Trump sneakers for the low price of $399.
POTUS white or tea red.
This is connecting with black America because they love sneakers. They're into sneakers. They love the, you know, this is a big deal, certainly in the inner city. He's reaching them on a level that defies and is above politics.
No. Whitey McFuckstick from Fox Not a News Channel, that is not how this works. Selling sneakers to black people in the hopes that they will vote for you is some of the most racist marketing I've ever seen out of a presidential campaign. And this is the third time Genghis Khan is running. But let's talk about Fat Nixon and what he's done for the black community lately since he brought it up. In October of 2020, when a black man by the name of Walter Wallace was murdered by police, Eric's dad said that the officers who killed the 27-year-old black man were, quote, the most incredible people on earth. And he also reinstated the federal death penalty while in office, probably because at the time, the majority of death row inmates were black. But one of my most favorite bait-and-switch schemes Trumple Thinskin unveiled while he was occupying the White House was the creation of Opportunity Zones in North Carolina. The pitch was that these totally not segregation zones would bring jobs and ambiguously phrased opportunities to low-income areas of North Carolina. But what it really was a way to give tax breaks to real estate investors and corporations. And all they had to do was promise to invest over 10 years, but they'd get all the bennies up front. Which makes right now a good time to bring up what a second Schittler presidency might mean for the black community, specifically regarding racism. Here is what Project 2025 has to say about it.
The most terrifying policy proposals for a possible Trump second term are all spelled out in one document, Project 2025. How it is uniquely bad for black Americans. Among the plans, ending support for black home ownership and businesses.
Three of the worst are the effort to basically end every civil rights department in every federal agency. He also wants to end the federal procurement agency's discrimination policies. But the worst of all is the effort to end or to include what they call school choice, which is basically the privatization of every school district in America. And what they want to do is end the collection of this racial data that proves the disparities that we've been fighting about and fighting for progress in for all of these years. Just erase any evidence of racism, and then you can claim, well, racism doesn't exist.
Now, I don't know about you, probably because we've never met, but I don't think erasing racism is what Janet Jackson meant when she asked, "What have you done for me lately?" It's bad enough that in 2024, we are still dealing with colonizer concepts like racism, but removing it from history from the next generation is just some daughter of the Confederacy bullshit. And would someone from the back please explain to me how just not acknowledging racism is going to make it all go away? Because ignoring it is what America did mostly until the 1960s. And before that, black families woke up to crosses burning on their front yards and teenage boys being beaten to death because a white woman Karen'd. And while we're on the subject of what MAGA Lardo has done for the black community, what about the three letters that make Republicans clutch their pearls?
Some of your own supporters, including Republicans on Capitol Hill, have labeled Vice President Kamala Harris, who is the first black and Asian American woman to serve as vice president and be on a major party ticket, as a DEI hire. Is that acceptable language to you? And will you tell those Republicans and those supporters to stop it?
How do you define DEI? Go ahead. How do you define
diversity, equity, inclusion?
Okay, yeah, go ahead. Is that what your definition?
Give that me a, is that, that is
give
literally
me a definition
the words,
then. Would you give me a definition
DEI.
Of that? Give me a definition
sir,
of that.
Sir, I'm asking you a question,
no,
a very direct
define
question.
It. Define it for me if you
I just defined it.
The this is the guy who doesn't know that the word asylum has two different meanings. And yet he's treating this question as if he's at a spelling bee, like he would ever be at a spelling bee. Except he's asking for a definition, when what he really wants is for the journalist to use the acronym in a sentence. Or did I let the trash panda out of the dumpster? Because, folks, DEI is not a word. It's an acronym. It stands for diversity, equity, and inclusion. And by giving you the words that the acronym stands for, I am defining it. I was surprised that it's not Don Jr., Eric, and Ivanka, which is what I thought DEI meant, considering maggots are always saying it so much. And since we're on a roll, let's talk about employment in the Black community.
Why come here? What is your message today?
My message is to stop people from invading our country. I will tell you that coming from the border are millions and millions of people that happen to be taking Black jobs. You had the best.
What exactly is a Black job, sir?
A Black job is anybody that has a job. That's what it is. Anybody that has a job.
All right.
You know, since he couldn't say what he wanted to, I really don't know what else this cracker as Crestor could have said to a room full of Black people who currently have jobs. Because as far as I know, Black jobs are not anyone who has a job. Because that would make everyone Black. And obviously, that's not what these white Crestors want. What the man who identifies as a citrus fruit couldn't bring himself to say is that a Black job is a scientist who discovered over 300 ways to use a peanut or come up with the correct mathematical equations so that astronauts could leave Earth's orbit. Or what about the president and vice president of the United States? Those are Black jobs. As of 2008 and 2020, respectively. So now that we've established just how poorly educated old man Donald actually is, what new and exciting verbal douchebaggery will the overbronze gourd come up with next?
Sir, do you believe that Vice President Kamala Harris is only on the ticket because she is a Black woman?
Well, I can say no. I think it's maybe a little bit different. She was always of Indian heritage, and she was only promoting Indian heritage. I didn't know she was Black until a number of years ago when she happened to turn Black, and now she wants to be known as Black. So I don't know, is she Indian or is she Black?
She has always
but
identified,
you know,
as a Black woman.
I respect either one. I respect either one, but she obviously doesn't, because she was Indian all the way, and then all of a sudden she made a turn and she became a Black person.
Just to be clear, sir, do
and
you
I
believe
think,
that
I think
she is
somebody a... should look into that.
Oh boy. You know, he's got some nerve saying that Kamala Harris suddenly turned Black, as if it's as easy as spending 8 hours in a spray tan booth. And not for nothing, but haven't we witnessed the oranging of the slob father over the years? I mean, back in the 80s and 90s and even into the early 2000s, he was pretty white. Cracker, I might say. But then, all of a sudden, he's been becoming more and more orange, starting around 2015. Perhaps someone should look into that. Because unlike being Black, orange is not a healthy color. It usually means jaundice, and in grumpy old men, it's probably a sign of cancer. All reasons why this jail-avoiding convict should not be running for president. And another thing, Kamala Harris is both Indian and Jamaican descent. Basically two races in one person. A concept way too complex for this white guy convict. Which makes me wonder if his final brain cell erupted when he heard his running mate's three children are not only white, but they're also a little brown, all at the same time. These innocent spring-offs have a white father and an Indian mother, who ironically has family from the same place as Kamala Harris. And while we're on the subject of Trump's running mate, Vladimir Futon.
Senator J.D. Vance is your running mate. He's not talking here about how great it is to be a parent. He's attacking what he says are the choices people are making to not have children. Did you know that he had these views about people who do not have children before you picked him to be your running mate? And do you agree with him?
No, I know this. He is very family oriented and he thinks family is a great thing. He strongly believes in family. What he's saying is that he thinks the family experience is a very important thing. It's a very good thing.
Senator J.D. Vance has suggested that someone who has children should have more votes than a person who does not have children. I just want to be clear here. Is that the position of your campaign?
Well, no, but it's not something I have ever heard before.
Wait, what? The guy who is known for watching TV with a 10-piece bucket warming his lap, if he isn't cheating at golf, hasn't seen the videos of his allegedly not a couch fucker VP pick explaining his certifiable take on the American family. Well, in honor of Drumstick, here is a montage of Juicy Douche Vance's greatest hits.
It is true that we become anti-family. It is true that the left has become anti-child. We're effectively run in this country via the Democrats, via our corporate oligarchs, by a bunch of childless cat ladies.
Really valuable when you have kids in your life. And the fact that so many people, especially in America's leadership class, just don't have that in their lives, you know, I worry that it makes people more sociopathic and ultimately our whole country a little bit less less mentally stable. And if the people who are most deranged and most psychotic are people who don't have kids at home.
Another 2021 remark Vance made, quote, "Let's tax the things that are bad and not tax the things that are good. If you're making $100,000, $400,000 a year, you've got three kids, you should pay a different, lower tax rate than if you're making the same amount of money and you don't have any kids."
When you go to the polls in this country as a parent, you should have more power. You should have more of an ability to speak your voice in our democratic republic than people who don't have kids.
Damn, Vance. Who hurt you? Was it a plastic-covered love seat? It's okay. You don't have to say it out loud. Because it's not for the love of family that this hillbilly don't care bear is railing against childless cat ladies. Because he actually thinks they should be punished for not contributing to the future of America. And if you think that idea is crap, this real-life Garbage Pail Kid has more stupid bumper carring all around his huge melon. Here's Jumbo Diarrhea's take on who should be running this country.
The thing that we have to take away from the last 10 years is that we really need to be really ruthless when it comes to the exercise of power. Like, they're talking about expanding the Supreme Court. They're talking about adding, you know, two senators from heavily Democratic places. The challenge confronting American conservatives is that we have lost every major powerful institution in the country, except for maybe churches and religious institutions, which of course are weaker now than they've ever been. And if we're going to actually really affect real change in the country, it will require us completely replacing the existing ruling class with another ruling class. I say that knowing and hearing myself, it sounds really hard. It is really hard. But I don't think there's like a detente with these people. I don't think there's sort of a compromise that we're going to come with the people who currently actually control the country. Unless we overthrow them in some way, we're going to keep losing. And that's the challenge.
Well, thank you, Vance. You just let the fire out of the dumpster, because that is exactly what Project 2025 aims to do. Replace what Mascara Vance calls the ruling class with another ruling class, one that worships Orange Jesus, the Antichrist. Oh, and don't forget about the poorly educated white sheep army of Christian nationalists, fourth meal warriors, and whatever you call those idiots at the RNC with the maxi pads taped to their right ear. Which makes me wonder, why aren't we talking about the definitely not a piece of glass that grazed one-eared Khan? It's only been a couple of weeks, and you'd think Von Krapps and Pampers would still be trying to milk that off-Broadway performance for every penny he could. But I digress. Let's get back to Scooby-Coo, old man justifying his VP pick.
Why did you choose J.D. Vance?
I chose him because he's a very strong believer in work and the working man and woman. He wrote the book that became a bestseller. The movie became a smash hit. But I will say this, and I think this is well documented. Historically, the vice president, in terms of the election, does not have any impact. I mean, virtually no impact. It's all about the presidential pick. Virtually never has it mattered. But historically, the choice of a vice president makes no difference. You're voting for the president.
Ouch. I imagine hearing that must have hurt Jabberdork Vance, finding out that his part of the MAGA ticket really doesn't matter. But then again, this dictatory way of thinking is right in line with Project 2025, because under Christian nationalism, all you need is a little help from your friends in Republican Jesus.
So what we're doing with Project 2025 is we're recruiting the MAGA America First Republicans right now so that we can take DC by storm in 2025. We're not going to go in like we did in 2017, where the establishment took over and co-opted much of the personnel of President Trump's administration. We're more prepared this time. We're recruiting grassroots conservatives. And we want all of you, if you want to serve in the next White House, next State Department, next Pentagon, we want you to sign up. Tell your sons, tell your daughters, tell all your friends. It's Project 2025.
Well, that is absolutely terrifying, especially considering the caliber of maggots in government right now. You've got bleach blonde, bad butch body from Georgia, Lauren, I vape and grope in public Boebert, and the alleged underage sex trafficker Matt Gaetz. All the best and finest coming from the evangelical makeover of America. Or as totally not couchfucker Vance put it,
I think that what Trump should do, like if I was giving him one piece of advice, fire every single mid-level bureaucrat, every civil servant in the administrative state, replace them with our people. Yeah, I mean, I think we got to do the hard work of institution building. And again, I've got friends who are working on this very problem right now, such that if there is a Trump administration round two, that we actually have the bureaucracy in place so that that person can govern effectively and not be constantly undercut.
In other words, have only loyalists working in your government so Donald Geezer can spend his orange years cheating on the golf course while downing quarter pounders, or having foreign dictators to his retirement home in Florida to swap classified documents and other state secrets. But that's just Project 2025's plans for the dawn of eternal stench, bringing his stank back to the White House. What about the election in November? Because right now, Kamala Harris is making Americans very excited about the future, according to, like, all the polls. So what's Tangerine Palpatine's plan for rigging the 2024 election? Because there's got to be something dastardly and all sorts of shenanigans afoot. So I'm thinking maybe it has to do with the votes.
Is that he doesn't think he needs to win the vote to win the election. He thinks something other than votes is going to determine whether or not he gets back in the White House. They are not planning on the vote being counted as normal. 70 different election officials who have been put into position in the swing states of Arizona, Georgia, Michigan, Nevada, North Carolina, and Pennsylvania to make sure that election results, no matter what they are, do not get certified in those states this year. According to Democratic election lawyer Mark Elias, quote, "I think we are going to see mass refusals to certify the election in November." They're counting on the fact that if they don't certify in several small counties, you can't certify statewide results. Democrats stand up what, by all accounts, looks like a juggernaut traditional campaign under Kamala Harris. Are they prepared for this level of weirdness after the votes are cast?
Now, I know hearing this is triggering for some because it spooks the shit out of me that random counties across the country could just refuse to certify their vote count if Kamala Harris wins their county. It renders the state unable to certify the total vote count for either candidate. But, you know, there is a way to stop these anti-certified maggots right in their tracks. It's called the U.S. legal system. We have courts. Although, these cases would probably make their way up to the bogus SCOTUS, and that might not necessarily be a win for democracy with old Whack Donald's jesters tipping the court toward theocracy. So, okay, not exactly the hero we were holding out for. But still, There is a sliver of hope that the courts will uphold democracy as we know it. So what then, mine incompetent? Gonna call on your supersized army of middle-aged weekend warriors? Well, according to the appropriately named Kevin Roberts from the Heritage Foundation, January 6th might be getting a sequel.
There are a lot of victories that have been secured. Some of them are partial. Some of them in ways that the other side doesn't yet know are foundations for what's coming. And that's just the beginning. And we're not going to tell you everything that's coming. Because for the first time that I'm aware of, the conservative movement, or as I really like to put it, the common sense movement in the United States has really nothing to do with ideology, is ready to fight.
So the White Reich in America has super secret squirrel plans for making sure Clown Ligula takes the throne again, and it includes refusing to certify actual vote counts in certain counties and replacing them with cheater von dictators, fake electors, and counterfeit certifications. Now, last time maggots tried this harebrained scheme, Mike Pence was VP, and he refused to play along, even under threat of hanging. He certified the real vote counts and submitted this to Congress. Now, this time, the orange turd's number two is the sofa king himself, J.D. Vance, who said on more than one occasion that if he were Veep back in 2020, he wouldn't have certified the actual vote count.
Had you been vice president on January 6th, would you have certified the election results?
If I had been vice president, I would have told the states like Pennsylvania, Georgia, and so many others that we needed to have multiple slates of electors, and I think the U.S. Congress should have fought over it from there.
I totally plan to accept the results of 2024. I think that Donald Trump will be the victory, and if it's a free and fair election, if we have a free and fair election, I'll accept the results.
Of course you would. Never mind that you and your kind would never define in public what you actually mean by free and fair election. But knowing that your ilk plan on cheating this November, it's pretty clear to me what you mean when you regurgitate that word salad. Not considering that Georgia's state legislators recently passed a law giving them the power to suspend local election officials. And in Arizona, there is a bill at the state house that would strip their Dem governor from the right to certify election results and hand it off to their maggot attorney general. Oh, and let's not forget about Arkansas and Kansas. They have laws on the books that could be used to overturn actual election vote counts. Because apparently the Reich wing learned some lessons from their failed coup in 2020. The good news is Kamala Harris's team is prepared for any legal bullshit Dolt 45 tries. And let's not forget, Kamala herself is a former prosecutor. She's got 27 years under her belt as an acting attorney, which makes her uniquely qualified to handle litigious Don. She knows his type, a scared chicken who doesn't have the courage to face Kamala unless his friends over at Fox Not a News Channel are hosting the party. Which prompted the most Gen X response by a presidential candidate that I can remember.
Well, Donald, I do hope you'll reconsider to meet me on the debate stage. Because as the saying goes, if you've got something to say, say it to my face.
And that's all I have to say about that. New episodes of This Week Again air every Sunday. And don't forget, Sundays at 6 p.m. Ohio time, you can re-listen to this very show on Crowtown Radio. You can follow This Week Again on social media wherever you can find us. And we're always available for your listening pleasure on Spotify, iHeartRadio, Audible, Amazon, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Thank you so much for listening to this show. To dare for now.